Has anybody else noticed that the talking heads of the British establishment, by which I mean former generals, MI6 bosses, senior diplomats and ambassadors, basically people involved long time with the British establishment, have been pretty openly counter-signaling the US admin, the Trump admin, and the Israeli line on the Iran war. And I'm witnessing something that I've never seen before. You know, I follow channels like Judge Napolitano, and he has guests on like John Mearsheimer and Douglas McGregor and people like this. And I also follow Duran and many other geopolitics channels. There's a guy, Lieutenant David Davis. You know, there's all these different, New Atlas is another one, Brian Beletic. You know, I watch all these guys and they give their takes and so on. But the British establishment has always had very different takes from these sorts of characters. For example, on the Ukraine war, the assessment of all of these people, every single one of these people that we're about to watch, was basically that Putin had made a mistake, that Putin is a madman, that NATO must back Ukraine 100%, that Russia's going to be bankrupted by the, you know, that they have been on hand to push the British establishment party line on Ukraine. What's interesting is that these clips I'm about to show you, which are airing all over British mainstream media, are not taking that line. They are, in fact, taking on the Iran war, that is, on the Iran war, they are taking the exact same line as all of those people that they disagree with on the Ukraine war with, you know, all those geopolitics channels. This is new. This is something I've not witnessed, because usually these people work in lockstep with what the American government is doing, whether it's in Ukraine, whether it's NATO, whether it's any operation back in the day with Iraq and so on. They all more or less towed, you know, the official line. With this one, they haven't, and I find it very, very, very curious. Before I show you these clips, I will just remind you, Foundations of Shakespeare, the release date is the 18th of March, so you can get in your pre-orders. If you're coming to that event next week that I'll be launching this book, I think you can buy some copies there in person as well. But on the 18th, this is released as of last Monday. It is now Thursday. So it was 60% were already sold out. It's probably a lot more than that now, because I'd be mentioning this every day. But, you know, if you want your copy soon, buy it now. If you have the Foundations of Shakespeare course, you can send the receipt to the publisher and get it for half price as a special deal. Probably the best way to get out of the best way to get the most out of the course and out of the book is to have them together. It's basically a textbook for the course. And yes, of course, a classic lecturer trick. You know, what's the set reading for the course? Yeah, my book. But that's what academics do. All right. Let's now take a look at a number of different people who I've seen in the mainstream media. Now, some of these clips, one of the things I've noticed is that they're airing. They're going out on radio. They're going out on television. But then the channel, you know how they put out clips later? Like Sky News put out clips of the content, or BBC and so on. And some of these are not being clipped. They're not being put out. So people are recording them on their phone. So that's why one of these clips, at least, is somebody recording it from their TV.
Yeah, I can. All right. Right. So Keir Starmer kept talking about the special relationship in action, and I was wondering if you thought whether the UK is doing enough.
Well, let's just squash any idea of a special relationship. It does not exist. It is a complete fantasy. America does what America wants to do, and Britain's got to look after its interests. And any relationship with America has got to be based on self-interest. Right. So that's the first point. I think the second point I'd make is that Britain shooting down drones, Britain engaged in offensive or defensive operations is invidious, frankly. The fact is that if Britain is involved, our hand is in the mangle. And the so what out of that is that we should not in any way, shape or form be involved with the Americans closely, because they are being led by a couple of gung-ho nutters like Trump and Hegseth, without a proper strategy, without serious thought about what the end state for this war is. And unless we keep cool heads, as the Prime Minister is attempting to do, and think things through very, very carefully, this thing could go the way of Iraq, as your previous speaker, the former ambassador US ambassador in Bahrain, made very clearly in your earlier interview.
Well, that's interesting you say that. What is your major worry about the way that this is being conducted then?
Well, yet again, we have an American president who has gone to war—a war of choice, a war of hubris, frankly—without any clear idea of how the war ends, without any clear strategy. And as the Chinese philosopher, master of war, strategist Sun Tzu said, 2,500 years ago, tactics without strategy is the noise before defeat. So the Americans might be getting frightfully excited about sinking submarines and X number of missions, bombing the Iranians to bits. But unless there's a strategy, unless they've thought through the impact of what they are doing on the minds of the Iranian people, this thing is going to go south very, very quickly. And I'll give you a good example. The idea of so-called assassinating the Ayatollah Khamenei, who was not just Iran's head of state, but he was the religious symbol for Shiites worldwide, assassinating him during the month of Ramadan, frankly, is about as subtle as murdering the Pope on the steps of St. Peter's in Holy Week. It will inflame the Shiite world. And what you're doing by doing that is probably pushing large numbers of Iranians who might have been reconcilable, who might have thought about rising up, back into the folds of the irreconcilable.
The first thing to say, Christian, is this is an unnecessary war. It was not required because it was not as if it was to preempt an imminent threat against the United States or indeed against Israel. The rationale, to the extent that there is one, is that it secures Israel for decades to come. That's what the Israelis think. And they would like to see the end of this Islamic Republic in Iran, and they think they will be much safer as a result. And they might be right, but this will come at a cost.
All expected in wargaming an Iran crisis, they've no match for the air power of the Americans and the Israelis, so they're doing an asymmetric attack on the Gulf oil installations, Straits of Hormuz. They're bringing the world into the crisis, predicted and predictable. And yet I don't think the Americans and Israelis have an answer to it. So right now, I don't see the de-escalation coming.
Is there a risk that they have a sort of saving the best for last type approach, weapons that could cause much greater regional damage than we've seen thus far, or not?
I think they're probably holding back some of their most sophisticated missiles, yes, but they've also got huge stocks of drones. And if we're in a game where $1 million air defence missiles shoot down $1,000 drones, you know, that is not sustainable in the longer term, either for the Israelis or the Americans.
Who served as British ambassador to Iran and joins me now. The continuing, and I have to say, widespread criticism of Sir Keir Starmer in many of the newspapers' editorials this morning. Sir Richard, how fair is that criticism in your view? Good morning.
It's unfair. There was a verbal negotiation which the Israelis and the United States aborted. Secondly, we've caught the Americans on the raw at a time when they're having great difficulty domestically with justifying this war. There is no majority in the United States for this war. There was clear indications from leaders of Congress after the briefing a few days before it was launched that there was no reason shown to them why there was a case for compelling reasons for United States to go to war at this time. They're now soft-pedaling their regime change justification. They are now preparing their people for a long period of war against what the American people had a hope to expect. So when Britain confirms the position taken by France, Germany, and itself and all our other European partners not to participate in the opening strikes, this is a difficult moment for the Americans, and they're lashing out against us, and we should not be unduly impressed by it. We should stick to a course which is in accordance with international law, while at the same time assisting the United States. That is, in brief, what Prime Minister Starmer is doing.
So when it comes to defending UK citizens in the region, we don't even do it ourselves?
We are doing it. We're actively assisting the United States in trying to destroy the Iranian missiles, which are raining down on the
But we didn't even defend
States.
Our own base in Cyprus, Sir Richard. We left that, to the Americans as well. I mean, how impotent should the United Kingdom look, in your view?
We're not looking impotent in the slightest. That was one small drone...
Which we didn't defend.
Launched by Hezbollah, and active steps were taken subsequently against the two drones that were directed at Akrotiri, which were successful. So we also have British planes in the skies assisting our partners in the Gulf to defend themselves against Iranian missiles. So the imputation that the UK is being weak is wrong.
When it comes to the Ayatollah and the now dead Ayatollah, what is it that gives you confidence that negotiations could have proceeded and come to fruition?
The clear statements by the Omani foreign minister who was mediating, and my own knowledge of the points which the Iranians were prepared to concede. These negotiations take time. Before they were aborted by Israel and the United States, many people pleaded for the United States to treat them seriously, but plainly they did not.
But what is it you admire most about the former Ayatollah's regime then?
What a daft question.
Why is that question?
I haven't indicated any admiration for the Ayatollah's
but
regime.
My understanding, and you'll be closer to it than
I. Would you,
my understanding is, and you'll be closer to ISA, Richard, there were people being killed.
Would you suggest that that's what I...
Because if you let me answer, my understanding, and you're closer to it than I, is this is a regime that was killing certainly possibly 5,000, possibly 35,000 of his own people, and imprisoning thousands more. It was a regime that I would have thought needed to go. So I'm asking, what possibly could it be that you admired in that regime?
There are a great many regimes around the world which need to go. But the important issue for Britain's national security is the framework set out after the end of the First World War to minimise the chances of the law of the jungle taking over from international law should be preserved. I'm afraid that our right-wingers, including Jeremy Hunt, are forgetting the lessons of the sacrifices of 20th century generations to try and prevent the law of strong powers overwhelming the rights of nations. And as a relatively weak power, United Kingdom security is dependent long term on re-establishing the rule of law.
But
now,
lastly,
we didn't go in with the United States on Vietnam or on Somalia.
But I just
wonder.
We didn't
participate in the war of choice against Yemen. It's nothing extraordinary for us to take a different position from the United States. And the people who are panicking about it are the Americans, because it's their domestic political problem, which they fear we have exacerbated.
Lastly, I wonder, Sir Richard, the rules, as you rightly point out, that were established after the First World War, with players such as President Xi, the late Ayatollah, President Putin on the world stage, are those laws still applicable, laws that came about more than 100 years ago?
Oh, come on. 100 years ago, in the course of human history, when human nature is what it is...
But obviously we didn't have a Putin, or we didn't have an Ayatollah, or we didn't have a Xi at those times.
We have had lots of them in the past, and it is wrong for us to think that just because we face a Trump and a Putin now, the laws which are there to protect small nations should somehow be jettisoned.
Okay.
The absence of a plan, Starmer was right to point out that. The absence of a legal base, he was right to point out that.
grateful for your time. Thank you very much, Sir Richard Dalton. You served as British ambassador to Iran.
I began by asking him how he thinks the Iranian military strategy is playing out.
It's working quite well. Iran is hammering the Israeli regime in retaliation for its atrocities and its unprovoked war. And it's hammering U.S. positions across the Persian Gulf region for its atrocities and the unprovoked war. And there's been no let up in Iranian responses. And that is because Iranian missile and drone bases are all deep underground and inaccessible to the United States and the Israeli regime. And that's why they take revenge on ordinary Iranians. They've been bombing Tehran and other cities, destroying homes, destroying hospitals, destroying schools, slaughtering children.
Could a new leader, do you think, negotiate with Trump and agree to his terms?
No. Iran is not interested in negotiating with Trump or the U.S. regime. Iran is going to punish the United States, and we are in the process of doing it. This regime in Washington has tried to cross a bridge that's a bridge too far. And they're messing with the wrong country.
What percentage of Iran's missile stocks remain?
The vast majority.
Because after last year's war, it was estimated that Iran had used up around 40% of its missiles. Are you saying that was replenished in the last few months?
Those numbers were always fake. Those numbers are provided by the Israeli regime to the media in order to convince foolish Americans that war against Iran is simple. And if the United States escalates, that will mean that the most sensitive region in the world, the Persian Gulf, where a quarter of the world's energy comes from, everything could be destroyed. And if that happens, it doesn't even matter if the Strait of Hormuz is open or closed, because there will be no oil or gas and there will be no tankers. For Iran, this is a fight for survival. For the United States, this is a war of choice.
Why is America doing this? After he'd started the war, President Trump said this.
Our objective is to defend the American people by eliminating imminent threats from the Iranian regime.
The U.S. hasn't provided evidence of an imminent threat, but that was the argument. President Trump also addressed Iranians.
When we are finished, take over your government. It will be yours to take. America is backing you with overwhelming strength.
In other words, a war in support of regime change. 2 days later, the administration said this.
This is not a so-called regime change war. But the regime sure did change.
But the regime hasn't changed. Not yet, at least. And there was more.
The mission of Operation Epic Fury is laser focused. Destroy Iranian offensive missiles, destroy Iranian missile production, destroy their navy and other security infrastructure, and they will never have nuclear weapons.
After U.S. action last year, Trump said Iran's nuclear program had been obliterated. Before that, U.S. intelligence had concluded Iran wasn't building a nuclear bomb. But this war, we were told, was to stop that happening and to destroy parts of Iran's military. That was the Secretary of Defense. We also heard from the Secretary of State.
We knew that there was going to be an Israeli action. We knew that that would precipitate an attack against American forces.
Mr. Rubio explained this meant the U.S. had to start the war.
We knew that if we didn't preemptively go after them before they launched those attacks, we would suffer higher casualties.
The U.S. has responded to an Israeli plan, Marco Rubio said. Not so, said the president. Iran, he argued, was ready to act.
I think they were going to attack first, and I didn't want that to happen. So if anything, I might have forced Israel's hand.
The U.S. provided no evidence that Iran was about to attack. And Marco Rubio was asked about his comments.
Yesterday, you told us that Israel was going to strike Iran and that's why we needed to get involved. Today, the president said that Iran was going to get...
Yeah, your statement is false. So that's not what I was asked very specifically. Were you there yesterday?
But that was what he said. The Trump administration has also been talking further about Iran's nuclear program. Officials claim Iran possessed 11 bombs worth of enriched uranium and that it could have turned it into weapons-grade nuclear material within a week. The administration has not shared evidence of this and didn't mention it when the war started. Perhaps there's also a personal dimension to this. Trump told ABC News, with reference to Iran's supreme leader, I got him before he got me. Trump added, they tried twice. Well, I got him first. ABC reported this was a reference to what US intelligence believes was a plot in 2024. For whatever reason, Trump started this war, and he's being asked about how long it might last.
We projected 4 to 5 weeks, but we have capability to go far longer than that.
On Truth Social, he added, wars can be fought forever and very successfully. And as the world watches this war and tries to understand why Trump started it and how long it might last, the vice president has offered some reassurance.
There's just no way that Donald Trump is going to allow this country to get into a multi-year conflict with no clear end in sight and no clear objective.
So basically the assessment is that Trump went in without a real plan. The story keeps on changing on a day-by-day basis. They are indiscriminately carpet bombing Tehran as we speak. They have been day and night. And they hit this ship off the coast of Sri Lanka, which many people are saying was, if it wasn't a war crime, it was certainly a break from the usual protocols of honor. You know, they just shot it. They let them drown. That's not usually what was done. A lot of people have pointed out that even German U-boats in World War II gave the chance of surrender. You know, people have made all these sorts of comments. Frankly, I'm not surprised that the US and Israel play dirty. You know, they are utterly without kind of any sort of moral bounds, in my view. We've seen how they play in previous conflicts. This is very US-Israeli style. But even though they may make for quite spectacular images and they may be killing lots of people, it still doesn't add up to a real plan. It seems like over time, there has been a bit of mission. I mean, first of all, they hoped that the people would rise up and overthrow. Well, that didn't happen. You know, after they killed the Ayatollah. Now it seems like they're trying to like bomb them into submission. Maybe the Iranians will give up. I don't think that's going to happen either. If anything, it is strengthening their resolve. Then there's been talks about maybe the Kurds coming over the border. That was nixed pretty quickly, and the Kurds said that wasn't happening. Now they've turned to Azerbaijan. You know, touch and go as to whether that happens. What it shows the classic signs of is panic. And that's why from hour to hour, almost, the story from Trump and Marco Rubio and somebody who may well be the most stupid person ever to hold high office in American history, Pete Hegseth. I mean, talk about someone who's a complete retard and completely unfit for the office that he holds, Pete Hegseth. You know, their story keeps on changing on almost an hourly basis. And the reason is because the real plan is the Americans maybe thought that the original plan was the right one, or maybe they knew that the real plan was the Israeli one all along. The Israeli plan is to destabilize, is to do in Iraq or Syria, to cause a civil war, okay, to create chaos and to create conditions for which the regime collapses and, you know, it balkanizes into a civil war. Whether that is going to happen or not remains to be seen, because the Iranians have been studying the Americans, studying the Israelis for the past 47 years, and it seems like they have continued, despite all of the noise and the firepower and the bombings and so on, continued to execute their plan. Just as I'm coming online, they bombed an oil refinery in Bahrain. People are saying that it is the largest decrease in oil supply in history, and it is 3 times larger than the Arab oil embargo of 1973. Okay, these are, I mean, we've had a total shutdown of Qatari liquid gas production. They're hitting oil refineries. Several large oil companies have just ceased production. There is no flow through the Strait of Hormuz apart from a couple of Chinese ships. And Iran are reportedly hitting strategic targets, radars, oil refineries, bases, all across the region. And of course, they continue to hammer Tel Aviv as well. And one of the strange things I've noticed about the mainstream media coverage, you know, yes, you're getting talking points like the ones that I just showed, but at the same time, they're focusing almost entirely on the US-Israeli bombardment and almost painting it as a humanitarian crisis, which is strange, because on the one hand, it may be showing, well, look at US power. But on the other hand, it's turning more people against the war because it's kind of painting Iran, you know, almost or the Iranian people at the very least, almost in a kind of victim oppressor way. And I find it odd that they're not reporting more the things that the Iranians are doing. You know, they hit 15 countries in one day. They have hit 26 major strategic targets in the region in the space of a couple of days. They continue to hammer on Tel Aviv. And as all of those experts were saying, there's a question about interceptors. How many have they got? Okay, we've already heard that they're moving some from South Korea. Today, the story was they're moving some interceptors from Ukraine. EU is begging Vladimir Putin for energy, to turn the taps back on for more oil, for more gas. And Putin is, you know, saying, well, maybe I might just turn it off altogether, turning the screws, maybe a bit of mind games. Maybe he's just kind of enjoying the moment because, you know, Russia has gained from this situation, no doubt, because it's drawing resources away from the Ukraine war. It's drawing strategic resources away from Southeast Asia and even the Far East. So the Chinese are obviously rubbing their hands. Yes, Iran is getting hit hard in Tehran. And, you know, they've hit 1,000 sites, the Americans keep on saying. But a lot, I mean, as you heard from the Iranian spokesman there, you could say, well, this is a bit of Baghdad Bob, right? That's the kind of, but the thing is, this is not the Iraq war. Everybody's got that as a reference and a touch point, but this is not the same. As he was saying, it's been well known, as with the nuclear manufacturing, they move the missile manufacturing under the ground. So many of the places the Americans have been hitting, just empty buildings. There was widely shared footage of the Americans bombing just pictures of drawings of planes on the floor, which weren't actually planes. So I still stand by my original assessment that the Americans don't seem to have a plan. Or if they do have a plan, they're making it up on the fly. And as the general said, you know, tactics without a strategy is a, you know, precursor to defeat. Now, I'm not saying that the Americans are certainly going to lose. Okay, and they're already talking that this could go on until September, and we're still very early days. But there's a lot of pretty stark warning signs that things are really not going that well. And, you know, obviously in the media, and obviously, you know, lots of the media is controlled by people who support the war and things like that. You're only getting drips and drabs of it. But it's just very noticeable to me that there is not blanket support from the British establishment on this. And they're repeating the same sorts of talking points that you're getting from, I guess, the alternative geopolitics channels that I just mentioned. So, yeah, there's a lot of indicators to me that, you know, the Americans may not know what they've gone in for. And, you know, they've got all these little things, you know, well, let's bring in the Kurds. I mean, if the Kurds went in, they'll get massacred. That's basically what will happen, which is probably why the Kurds have not got in. Maybe the Kurds are like, right, we're not going to pick up our 800th Fell For It Again awards. I think this is like the 10th time that the Americans have tried to use the Kurds. Maybe they were like, well, hold on, the last 9 times we all got slaughtered. If they try to use Azerbaijan, okay, as a, you know, maybe use Azerbaijanis as a ground invasion, Iran will hit Azerbaijan and cripple its energy. And I mean, like what they're doing to Bahrain and the Gulf states, they'll just, I mean, Azerbaijan is right there, it borders with Iran, asking for trouble. Also, you're at risk then of drawing the Russians in, because that's, they're up there as well. So far, in terms of, you know, they have, the Russians and the Chinese have not formally got involved. They probably won't militarily get involved, if I had to guess, but they have remained staunchly kind of lot, like they have not, they've condemned the America's attack. They condemned Israel, and they've stayed kind of loyal to Iran because it is in their interest for this regime to survive, because they've made all sorts of deals. The Chinese have invested billions in Iran. So, yeah, I mean, in my opinion, the situation as it stands, okay, the images are graphic, okay, and they're kind of, but in a way, I mean, this is going to sound terrible because real people are having their lives affected. Real people are being killed, okay, which is tragic. But in the cold light of day, you have to say, well, who is hitting strategic targets? Who is making progress and executing their plan versus who is just kind of, you know, it's almost like the war equivalent of a tantrum of a, oh, we're the best. We've got the biggest army. This is, but it's still basically a spaz out. It doesn't look, I mean, they're trying to project strength, but it doesn't look strong. And what it, and the optics of it, I mean, even in this country, the Telegraph, which is the most warmongery, neoconish newspaper, you know, they still ran a headline that made it look like, this is an apocalypse, or this is, they made it look like the Americans are being cruel and evil and sadistic even, which is just like, you know, it's a bad look. There's just optically, things aren't going well. And the mainstream media strategy are focusing only on American offensives and giving much less time to Iranian offensives in the region and Iranian hits on Israel is, you know, it's not having the effect. I mean, maybe they do it because, you know, they've got this thing where we need to project American invincibility or something like that. Maybe they're thinking that, but that is not the actual effect of it. It just makes America look like, you know, sadistic bullies or something. And it also kind of slightly mistells the story of what's going on in this war. Although, like I said, every single time one of those establishment guys comes on, they counter signal all of those official narratives and actually give you some stuff there. So it's still early days. Everybody, you're kind of glued to your phone doom scrolling all the time to see like what's happened now. But yeah, that's the way I see it. I'll be back next week. I've got quite a busy week next week. I'm into London to do an interview on Monday. I've got an event on Wednesday. So, you know, if my videos are a bit patchy next week, it's because I'm doing quite a lot of stuff, but I'll try to maintain my normal schedule as much as I can. All right. Pick up Foundations of Shakespeare, ladies and gentlemen, the book and the course, Trivium, of course, many other great courses, and I'll see you next time. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just 3 of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.